Waikato Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Today, we're tackling one of European history's most persistent myths.
Mm-hmm. The Celts.
Exactly. The idea of the Celts is this, you know, single unified group sweeping across the continent. We're diving into the work of Sir Barry Cunliffe, and his book really makes you rethink everything.
Yeah, if you picture like blue war paint and these huge unified armies, well, prepare for a major reset. Cunliffe basically argues that the Celt as this single entity, it didn't really exist. Not like we've been told for, what, 2,000 years?
Right. So the big question we're digging into is, who were these people, really? We need to strip away all that Roman propaganda, the later Romantic stuff.
Get down to the actual evidence. And Cunliffe's main point, right off the bat, is that they were not one ethnic group migrating in waves.
Instead, it's more like a cultural phenomenon, a mosaic, he calls it. Lots of different societies connected by certain shared things. Exactly. Shared culture, maybe shared language elements, spreading through contact, through trade, not necessarily conquest. Understanding that shift is really key to understanding Iron Age Europe.
And if anyone has the credentials to challenge these old ideas, it's Sir Barry Cunliffe.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of Britain's most distinguished archaeologists, emeritus professor at Oxford. I mean, the man's written over 50 books.
Wow.
And crucially, this isn't just theory. He spent decades doing hands-on field work, you know, digging at sites like the Danebury Hill Fort. His history is built from the ground up, literally.
And what makes his view so different is that he pulls together multiple strands of evidence, right? It's not just the classical texts, which, let's be honest, are often biased.
Totally biased. He uses archaeology, linguistics, and those texts, but he reads the texts against the archaeological evidence.
Yeah.
He lets the material culture, the physical stuff, correct the narratives written by, say, the Romans.
It gives him so much authority, especially his work on the Atlantic coastlines, you know, Spain up to Britain and Ireland.
Right. He argues that the Atlantic wasn't the edge of the world back then. It was a busy highway, a cultural corridor connecting people for ages. That geographical view is absolutely central to his whole argument about how Celtic culture spread.
Okay, so let's get into the core idea of the book, Cunliffe's main thesis. It sounds simple, but it's actually pretty radical.
It is. He says Celtic culture, language, all those traits, they mostly developed in situ, locally, people already living there.
So not invaders bringing it all in.
Much less of that. More about gradual cultural transmission. Think about things spreading through trade networks or maybe adopting a new way of doing things because it was seen as high status.
Mm.
It completely undermines that old invasion model.
It's kind of like how, I don't know, certain fashions or technologies spread today, not because everyone moved, but because the idea caught on.
That's a great analogy. Mm-hmm. Like English becoming a global language, not just through conquest, but because it became useful, prestigious, its diffusion adoption. Cunliffe applies that logic to the Iron Age.
Okay, so to help us grasp this complexity, Cunliffe breaks down the word Celt. He says it's actually tangled up in four different meanings or threads.
Yeah, they often get mixed up. So thread one is the label the Greeks used, Keltoi.
Just a general term for barbarians up north.
Pretty much a vague outsider's term. Didn't mean those people necessarily saw themselves as one group.
Okay. Thread two.
That's the family of Celtic languages, you know, Q-Celtic like Irish and Scottish Gaelic and P-Celtic like Welsh and Breton. But these connections, they were only really figured out by linguists much later, like in the 18th century.
Got it. Thread three is the stuff archaeologists find.
Exactly. The material culture,
mm-hmm.
especially that amazing Latin art style, the intricate metalwork, the swirling designs. That's a key marker for archaeologists.
And thread four is the modern idea.
Right. The self-identified Celtic fringe. Today, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and so on. They're modern cultural identity. Cunliffe's whole project is kind of untangling these four threads throughout history.
So let's start untangling. Let's look at that first thread, the Keltoi label, and how the classical world, like Rome, saw them.
Cunliffe calls it the barbarian conspiracy.
Mm.
And he's very clear. Writers like Caesar, Tacitus, they weren't writing objective history.
They had an agenda.
Absolutely. They were creating political propaganda, emphasizing chaos, warfare, human sacrifice, all the scary stuff to basically justify Roman expansion and conquest. Look how uncivilized these people are. We need to bring order.
It sounds like classic political spin, really.
It totally is. Ancient Roman campaign ads, basically. But the archaeology paints a very, very different picture.
So what does the digging actually show? What contradicts that barbarian stereotype?
Well, for starters, sophisticated political structures. Large, fortified settlements, the Romans called them oppida. These weren't just muddy villages. They were like proto-cities, centers for trade, administration.
Organized.
Highly organized. Extensive international trade networks, too. These societies were far more complex than the Roman writers wanted their audience to believe. Think about Vercingetorix in Gaul.
Yeah, Caesar paints him as this wild chieftain.
Right. But Cunliffe shows him as a shrewd political leader trying to unite disparate tribes against Rome. That's sophisticated statecraft, not just savagery.
Okay, that really challenges the Roman view. Now, what about the second threat, the languages? This is where the whole migration idea really gets turned on its head, isn't it?
This is the big paradigm shift. For ages, historians assumed, if you find Celtic languages somewhere like Ireland, well, Celtic speakers must have invaded and replaced whoever was there before.
Seems logical on the surface.
But Cunliffe says, hold on. The archaeological evidence often shows continuity. The same basic settlement patterns, the same pottery styles. It doesn't look like a mass replacement of people.
So how did the language spread then, if not by invasion?
Through prestige, potentially. Maybe a small group of influential elites adopts the language because it's linked to new technologies or better trade access. Then others follow suit over time because it's advantageous.
Ah, along those Atlantic seaways you mentioned, the Atlantic Celtic hypothesis.
Exactly. The language could have spread along those coastal routes, adopted by the existing indigenous populations over generations.
So, wait, does that mean, like, genetically, the people in Ireland today might not be directly descended from the very first Celtic speakers there?
That's a key implication. The language spread might have been primarily cultural, not genetic. The people might be largely descended from the folks who were there before the language arrived. They just adopted a new language and cultural package. It sort of decouples language from genetics.
Wow. That's a huge shift in thinking.
It's a major methodological point for anyone studying history or identity.
Okay, let's move to thread three, the material culture. If culture spread through networks and trade, what were they trading? How wealthy were these societies? Let's talk Hallstatt and Latin.
Right, the earlier Hallstatt period, say 1200 down to 400 BCE. This era shows incredible wealth in some areas. Think of the Hallstatt salt mines in Austria.
Salt was like gold back then, right?
Pretty much. And these weren't tiny operations. Cunliffe describes organized, almost industrial-scale mining that generated serious wealth, which funded those incredibly rich burials you find, full of bronze and gold, imported goods. It shows a highly stratified society with powerful elites.
And that wealth sort of fuels the next phase, the Latin period.
Exactly. From around 400 BCE onwards, you get this explosion of Latin art. This is the style most people think of as Celtic, that beautiful, abstract, curvilinear metalwork.
You see it on shields, torques, cauldrons.
Yeah, iconic objects like the Battersea shield found in the Thames or the amazing Gundestrup cauldron from Denmark. The craftsmanship is just breathtaking. It shows incredible technical skill and artistic vision. And this art style spreads over a vast area, which itself acts as a kind of unifying cultural force linking diverse communities.
Okay, so we have biased texts, language spreading differently, amazing art. Now, heading towards the Roman era, let's touch on thread four, resilience and how this connects to modern identity. We have to talk about the Druids.
Yes, the Druids. Again, classical sources love the sensational stuff, human sacrifice, mystical rites.
But Cunliffe gives a more grounded view.
Much more. He sees them primarily as the intellectual and religious elite. They were judges, teachers, philosophers, keepers of tradition and law. Crucially, their influence often crossed tribal lines. They were a kind of social glue holding disparate groups together within a shared cultural understanding.
And maybe that underlying social sophistication is why Celtic culture didn't just vanish when Rome showed up.
Precisely. It wasn't wiped out, it adapted. In many parts of the Roman Empire, you get these vibrant Romano-Celtic hybrid cultures. They adopt Roman ways but keep core local traditions. And in places Rome didn't conquer or hold for long, like Ireland and parts of Britain, the Celtic fringe, those traditions and languages survive more strongly.
Boudica comes to mind, Queen of the Iceni in Britain.
A perfect example. Caesar would have just called her a rebellious barbarian queen, but her uprising shows serious political organization, mobilizing huge numbers of people across different tribes. It demonstrates that these societies could mount sophisticated challenges to Roman power, even if they ultimately failed militarily. That shows resilience, adaptation.
That resilience really leads into the big takeaways from Cunliffe's work, doesn't it? What are the key messages we should really remember?
Okay, number one, and this is the big one. Cultural evolution over migration. Culture, language, ideas, they often spread through networks, trade, influence, not necessarily through armies replacing populations. This messes with simple ideas about ethnicity.
Makes sense. Yes.
Second, diversity within unity. These Celtic societies weren't all the same. You had wealthy, almost urban Gauls and more pastoral societies in Ireland, huge regional differences, but they shared patterns in art, language, maybe religion. So a culture can be widespread and diverse.
Yeah, and third.
The primacy of archaeology. This is almost a lesson in how to do history. The physical evidence, the pots, the post holes, the metalwork, gives us a less biased view than texts written by conquerors or outsiders. You have to listen to the silent evidence from the ground.
That's a powerful point for anyone learning about the past.
And finally, maybe number four, separating ancient reality from modern identity. The vibrant Celticity today in Scotland, Ireland, Wales. It's real. It's important. But Cunliffe insists it's largely a modern construction, a reimagining from the last few centuries. It's distinct from the lived reality of the diverse Iron Age peoples.
Right. It draws inspiration, but it's not the same thing.
Exactly.
Okay, let's try and boil this down even further. If we could pull out three absolutely essential ideas from Cunliffe, like mental quotes to take away, what would they be?
Good idea. Okay, first one, on identity. The Celts were never a people in any ethnic sense, nor were they ever a nation. They were a collection of diverse communities that shared certain cultural traits and spoke related languages. That just blows up the whole Celtic race idea.
Completely. Okay, second.
On methodology. To understand the Celts, we must abandon the perspectives of Caesar and Tacitus and listen to what the archaeological evidence tells us about how these societies actually functioned. Basically, trust the dirt over the propaganda.
The physical truth corrects the political fiction. Love that. And the third.
On geography, and this is crucial, the Atlantic was not an edge, but a center, a busy seaway connecting a continuous cultural zone for thousands of years. That changes how you even picture Europe.
It really does. So thinking about all this, how can we apply this kind of thinking in our lives today? What are the real-world applications?
Well, first off, it's a masterclass in critically evaluating labels. Anytime you hear a simple ethnic or national label applied to a large group of people, ancient or modern, Cunliffe's work teaches you to pause.
Ask questions.
Exactly. Ask, who created this label? Whose interest does it serve? What diversity is it hiding? That's super relevant for navigating media and politics today, isn't it?
Absolutely. What else?
There's a lesson in managing change, I think. Look at how Celtic cultures adapted under Rome. They didn't just disappear, they selectively adopted things while maintaining core values. That's relevant for any group, any organization, even personally. How do you adapt to new influences without losing your identity?
That's a really interesting angle, sort of resilience through adaptation.
Yeah. And finally, it underlines that identity is fluid. It's a narrative we construct, not some fixed biological essence. Understanding that helps us approach things like multiculturalism with more nuance, maybe focus more on shared values and practices rather than insisting on ethnic sameness for communities to work.
So reflecting back on this whole deep dive, what was the most surprising thing for you?
For me, it's still just how powerful and wrong that barbarian label was and how effectively it hid the reality of sophisticated, organized societies. It really shows how propaganda can shape history for centuries.
Yeah, that struck me too. For me, I think the biggest takeaway is the methodological one you mentioned earlier. It's about how we know what we know about the past, combining different kinds of evidence, questioning the sources, especially the written ones. It's a guide for thinking critically about any historical narrative, not just the Celts.
Well said. It really equips you to question those comfortable, easy assumptions.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.